Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of 12th Hour Cross College Chapel Channel Congregation. I was out at the 12th Hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is January 28th, 2023. It is the 17th day of Shabbat, 2027. We will start a first service today with a song, and then we'll go into our prayer, and then we'll go into our service. It's going to be the name of our sermon today is Cain and Abel Tested. This is chapter 5 of Patriarchs and Prophets, Bill and G. White. We're on page 71. This is Cain and Abel, the sons of Adam, differed widely in their character. For the Abel had a spirit of the loyalty unto Yahweh. He saw justice and mercy in the Creator's dealings with the fallen race, and gratefully accepted the hope of the redemption. But Cain cherished feelings of rebellion and murmured against Yahweh because of the curse pronounced upon the earth and upon the human race for the Adam's sin. For he permitted his mind to run in the same channel that led unto Satan's fall, indulging the desire for self-exaltation and questioning the divine justice and authority. These brothers were tested as Adam had been tested before them, to prove whether they would be believe and obey the word of the Yahweh, for they were acquainted with the provision made for the salvation of man, and understood the system of the offerings which the Yahweh had ordained. For they knew that in these offerings they were to express faith in the Savior whom the offerings typified, and at the same time to acknowledge of their total dependence on Him for the pardon. And they knew that by thus forming unto the divine plan for their redemption, here it is, conforming unto the divine plan for their redemption, they were giving proof of their obedience unto the will of Yahweh. Without the shedding of the blood, there could be no remission of sin, and they were to show their faith in the blood of the Yeshua as the promised atonement by the offering of the firstlings of the flock and the sacrifice. Besides this, the first fruits of the earth were to be presented before the Yahweh as a thank offering. For the two brothers erected their altars alike, and each brought an offering. For the Abel presented a sacrifice from the flock in the accordance with the Yahweh's direction. And the Yahweh had respect unto Abel and unto his offering. Far flashed from the heaven and consumed the sacrifice, but Cain, disregarding the Yahweh's direct and explicit command, presented only an offering of the fruit. There was no token from heaven to show that it was accepted for the Abel of pleaded with his brother to approach Yahweh in the divinely prescribed way. But his entreaties only made Cain the more determined to follow his own will. As the eldest, he felt above being admonished by his brother and despised his counsel. Cain came before Yahweh with a murmuring and infidelity in his heart in regard unto the promised sacrifice and the necessity of the sacrificial offering, for his gift expressed no penitence for sin. For he felt, as many now feel, that it would be an acknowledgement of their weakness to follow the exact plan marked out by the Yahweh of the trusting his salvation wholly unto the atonement of the promised Savior. For he chose the course of the self-dependence. He would come in his own merits. He would not bring the lamb and mingle its blood with his offering, but would present his fruits, the product of his labor. For he presented his offering as a favor done unto Yahweh, through which he expected to secure the divine approval. Cain obeyed the building and altar obeyed for the Cain obeyed in the building of an altar obeyed in the bringing of a sacrifice. But he rendered only a partial obedience. For the essential part, the recognition of the need of a Redeemer, was left out. So far as the birth and religious instruction were concerned, these brothers were equal. Both were sinners and both acknowledged the claims of the Yahweh to reverence and worship. For the outward appearance, their religion was the same up until a certain point. But beyond this, the difference between the two was great. By the faith in the blood of the Yeshua, Abel offered unto the Yahweh more extra sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous. For the Abel grasped the great principles of the redemption. For he saw himself as a sinner, and he saw sin and his penalty, death, standing between his soul and communion with the Yahweh. He brought the slain victim, the sacrificed life, thus acknowledging the claims of the law that had been transgressed. Through the shed blood, he looked to the future sacrifice for Yeshua, with the Yeshua dying on the cross of the Calvary and trusting in the atonement that was there to be made. He had a witness that he was righteous and his offering accepted. Cain had the same opportunity of the learning and accepting these truths as had Abel, for he was not the victim of an arbitrary purpose. One brother was not elected to be accepted of Yahweh and the other to be rejected. Abel chose faith and obedience, Cain unbelief and rebellion. Here the whole matter rested. Cain and Abel represented two classes that will exist in the world till the close of time. One class avails themselves of the appointed sacrifice for sin. The other venture to depend upon their own merits Theirs is a sacrifice without the virtue of the divine meditation, and thus it is not able to bring man into the favor with Yahweh, for it is only through the merits of the Yeshua that our transgression can be pardoned. Those who feel no need of the blood of the Yeshua, who feel that without the divine grace they can, by their own works, secure the approval of Yahweh, are making the same mistake as did Cain. If they do not accept the cleansing blood, they are under or with the condemnation, for there is no other provision made whereby they can be released from the thraldom of sin. For the class of the worshippers who follow the example of the Cain includes by far the greater portion of the world. For nearly every false religion has been based on the same principle, that man can depend upon his own efforts for salvation, for it is claimed by some that the human race is in the need not of the redemption but of the development that it can refine, elevate, and regenerate itself as a chain thought to secure the divine favor by an offering that like the blood of a sacrifice, so do these expect to exalt humanity for the divine standard independent of the atonement. For the history of Cain shows what must be the result, for it shows what man will become apart from Yeshua. Humanity has no power for the regeneration of itself, for it does not tend upward toward the divine, but downward toward the satanic, for Yeshua is our only hope. There is none other name under heaven given among men whereby we must be saved, neither is there salvation in any other. True faith, which relies wholly upon Yahshua, will be manifested by the obedience unto all the requirements of Yahweh. From the Adam's day until the present time, the great controversy has been concerning obedience unto Yahweh's law. In all ages, there have been those who claimed a right for the favor of Yahweh, even while they were disregarding some of his commands. But the scriptures declare that by their works is the faith made perfect. Again, it says, verily the scriptures declare that by their works is the faith in the blood of Yeshua made perfect, and that without the works of the obedience, faith in the blood of Yahshua is dead. For he that professes to know Yahweh and keepeth not his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. When the Cain saw that his offering were rejected, he was angry with Yahweh, and with Abel, he was angry that Yahweh did not accept man's substitute in the place of the sacrifice divinely ordained. And angry with his brother for the choosing to obey Yahweh instead of joining in the rebellion against him, notwithstanding the change, disregard of the divine commandment, Yahweh did not leave him unto himself, but he condescended to reason with the man who had shown himself so unreasonable. And the Yahweh said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? Truth. An angel messenger, the divine warning was conveyed. If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted. And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. For the choice lay with the Cain himself. If he would trust to the merits of the promised Savior and would obey Yahweh's requirement, he would enjoy his favor. But should he persist in the unbelief and transgression, he would have no ground for the complaint because he was rejected by the Yahweh. But instead of the acknowledging of his sin, Cain continued to complain of the injustice of the Yahweh, and to cherish jealousy and hatred and Abel, his brother, for he angrily reproached his brother and attempted to draw him into the controversy concerning Yahweh's dealings with them. In the meekness yet fearlessly and firmly, Abel defended the justice and goodness of Yahweh, for he pointed out Cain's error and tried to convince him that the wrong was in himself. For he pointed unto the compassion of Yahweh and the sparing the life of their parents, when he might have punished them with the instant death, and urged that Yahweh loved them, or he would not have given his son, innocent and holy, to suffer the penalty which they had incurred. All this caused Cain's anger to burn the hotter. Reason and conscience told him that Abel was in the right, but he was enraged that one who had been wont to heed his counsel should now presume to disagree with him, and that he could gain no sympathy in his rebellion. In the fury of his passion, he slew his brother. For the Cain hated and killed his brother, not for any wrong that Abel had done, but because of his own works, that his own works were evil and his brothers were righteous. So in all ages, the wicked have hated those who were better than themselves. For the Abel's life of the obedience and unanswering faith was to Cain as a perpetual reproof. Everyone that doeth evil hateth the light, and now that cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. For the brighter the heavenly light that is reflected from the character of Yahweh's faithful servant, the more clearly the sins of the unrighteous are revealed, and the more determined will be their efforts for the destroying of those who disturb their peace. For the number of the Abel was the first example of the enmity that Yahweh had declared would exist between the serpent and the seed of the woman. Between Satan and his subjects and Yahshua and his followers, through man's sin, Satan had gained control of the human race. But Yahshua would enable them to cast off his yoke whenever, through faith in the Lamb of Yahweh, a soul renounces the service of sin, Satan's wrath is kindled. for the holy life of the evil testified against Satan's claim that it is impossible for man to keep Yahweh's law when the chain moved by the spirit of the wicked one saw that he could not control Abel. He was so enraged that he destroyed his life. Wherever there are any who will stand in the vindication of the righteousness of the law of Yahweh, the same spirit will be manifested against them. It is the spirit that through all the ages has set up the stake and kindled the burning pile for the disciples of Yahshua, but the cruelties heaped upon the follower of the Yahshua are instigated by the Satan and his host because they cannot force him to submit unto their control. It is the rage of a vanquished foe. Every mortal of Yahshua has died a conqueror, says the prophet, for they overcame him, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death. Cain, as the murderer, was soon called to answer for his crime. But Yahweh said unto Cain, where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not, am I my brother's keeper? Cain had gone so far in sin that he had lost his sense of the continual presence of the Yahweh and of his greatness and omnipresence. So he resorted to the falsehoods for the concealing of his guilt. Again, the Yahweh said unto Cain, what hast thou done? For the voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. For Yahweh had given Cain an opportunity for the confession of his sin, for he had had time to reflect, for he knew the enormity of the deed he had done and of the falsehood he had uttered for the concealing it, but it was rebellion, but he was rebellious still, and sentence was no longer deferred. For the divine voice that had been heard in the entreaty and admonition pronounced the terrible word, and now art thou cursed from the earth, which hath opened her mouth for the receiving thy brother's blood from thy hand. When thou tillest the ground, it shall not henceforth yield unto thee her strength. A fugitive and a vagabond shalt thou be in the earth. Now, notwithstanding that the Cain had by his crime merited the sentence of the death for a merciful Creator still spared his life and granted him an opportunity for the repentance. Verily, the Cain lived only to harden him his heart, for the encouraging of the rebellion against the divine authority, and for the becoming as the head of a line of the bold, abandoned sinners. This one apostate led on by the Satan became a tempter unto others, and his example and influence exerted their demoralizing power until the earth became so corrupt and filled with the violence as to call for its destruction. In the sparing of the life of the first murderer, Yah presented before the whole universe a lesson bearing upon the great controversy for the dark history of the Cain and his descendants was an illustration of what would have been the result of the permitting the sinner to live on forever for the carrying out of his rebellion against the Yahweh. For the forbearance of the Yahweh only rendered the wicked more bold and defiant in their iniquity. 15 centuries after the sentence pronounced upon the Cain, the universe witnessed the fruition of his influence and example, and the crime and pollution that flooded the earth. It was made manifest that the sentence of the death pronounced upon the fallen race for the transgression of Yahweh's law was both just and merciful, for the longer men lived in sin, the more abandoned they became. For the divine sentence, a cutting short of a career of the unbridled iniquity and freeing the world from the influence of those who had become hardened in the rebellion, was a blessing rather than a curse. Satan is constantly at work with the intense energy and with 1,000 disguises for the misrepresenting of the character and the government of the Yahweh, with the extensive, well-organized plans and marvelous power he is working for the holding of the inhabitants of the world with his deception. For Yahweh, as the one infinite and all-wise, sees the end from the beginning, and in the dealing with the evil, his plans were far-reached and comprehensive. It was his purpose not merely to put down the rebellion, but to demonstrate unto all of the universe the nature of the rebellion. For Yahweh's plan was unfolding, showing both his justice and his mercy, and fully vindicating his wisdom and righteousness in his dealings with the evil. For the holy inhabitants of the other worlds were watching with the deepest interest of the events taking place on the earth in the condition of the world that existed before the flood. They saw the illustrated the results of the administration which the Lucifer had endeavored to establish in the earth in the rejecting of the authority of the Asura and casting aside the law of the Yahweh. And those high-handed sinners of the antediluvian world, they saw the subject over whom Satan held sway. For the thoughts of the men's hearts were only evil continually. Every emotion, every impulse and imagination was at war with the divine principles of the purity and peace and love. It was an example of the awful depravity resulting from the Satan's policy for the removing from the Yahweh's creatures the restraint of his holy law. By the facts unfolded in the progress of the great controversy, Yahweh will demonstrate the principles of his rules of the government, which have been falsified by the Satan and by all whom he has deceived. His justice will finally be acknowledged by the whole world. though the acknowledgment will be made too late for the saving of the rebellion, Yahweh carried with him the sympathy and approval of the whole universe. Step by step, his great plan advances for its complete fulfillment, for he will carry it with him in the final eradication of the rebellion. It will be seen that all who have forsaken the divine precepts have placed themselves on the side of the Satan in the warfare against Yahshua. When the prince of this world shall be judged, and all who have united with him shall share his fate, the whole universe, as the witnesses to the sentence, will declare, "Just and true are thy ways, thou King of Saints." This is the end of chapter 5. Chapter 6 goes into Seth and Enoch. This is on page... So it says, "Unto Adam was given another son to be the inheritor of the divine promise. For the heir of the spiritual birthright, the name Seth, given unto this son, signified appointed or compensation, for, said the mother, Yahweh hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain slew. Seth was of the more noble stature than Cain or Abel in rebellion, and resembled Adam more closely than did his other son, for he was a worthy, character following in the steps of the Abel. Yet he inherited no more natural goodness than did Cain. Concerning the creation of Adam, it is said, in the likeness of Yahweh made he him. But man after the fall begat a son in his own likeness after his image, while Adam was created sinless in the likeness of the Yahweh. Seth, like Cain, inherited the fallen nature of his parents, but he received also the knowledge of the Redeemer and instruction in their righteousness. By the divine grace, he served and honored Yahweh, and he labored as Abel would have done had he lived to turn the minds of the sinful men to rever and obey their Creator. And the Seth, to him also there was born a son, and he called his name Enos, E-N-O-S. Then began men to call upon the name of the Yahweh, for the faithful had worshipped Yahweh before. But as men increased, the distinction between the two classes became more marked. There was an open profession of loyalty to Yahweh on the part of the one, as there was of the contempt and disobedience on the part of the other. Before the fall, our first parents had kept the Sabbath that was instituted in Eden, and after their expulsion from the paradise, they continued its observance, for they had tasted of the bitter fruits of the disobedience and had learned what every one that tramples upon the Yahweh's commandment will sooner or later learn, that the divine precepts are sacred and immutable, and that the penalty of the transgression will surely be inflicted. For the Sabbath was honored by all the children of Adam that remain loyal unto Yahweh. But Cain and his descendants did not respect the day upon which Yahweh had rested, for they chose their own time for the labor and for the rest, regardless of Yahweh's express command. Upon receiving the curse of Yahweh, Cain had withdrawn from his father's household. He had first chosen his occupation as a tiller of the soil, and he now founded a city, calling it after the name of his eldest son. He had gone out from the presence of Yahweh, chased away the promise of the restored Eden, but for the seeking of his possessions and enjoyment in the earth with the curse of sin. Thus standing at the head of that great class of men who worship the God of this world and that which pertains unto mere earthly and material progress, his descendants became distinguished. But they were regardless of Yahweh and in the opposition unto his purpose from man to the crime of murder in which Cain had led the way. Lamech, as the fifth in the descent, added polygamy and boastfully defiant. He acknowledged Yahweh only to draw from the avenging of Cain and assurance of his own safety. Abel had led a pastoral life, dwelling in the tents of Booth, and the descendants of Seth followed the same course, accounting themselves strangers and pilgrims on the earth, seeking a better country, that is, in heavenly. For some time the two classes remained separate, for the race of the Cain spreading from the place of their first settlement dispersed over the plains and the valley where the children of Seth had dwelt, and the latter, in order for their escaping from their own contaminating influence, withdrew to the mountains and there made their home. So long as this separation continued, they maintained their worship of the Yahweh and his purity. But in the lapse of time, they ventured little by little to mingle with the inhabitants of the valleys. The association was productive of the worst result. For the sons of Yahweh saw that the daughters of men, that they were fair. For the children of Seth, attracted by the beauty of the daughters of Cain, descendants, displeased Yahweh by intermarrying with them. Many of the worshippers of Yahweh were beguiled with unto sin by the allurements that were now constantly before them, and they lost their peculiar holy character. Mingling with the depraved, they became like them in the spirit and in the deeds. The restrictions of the seventh commandment was disregarded, and they took them wives of all which they chose. For the children of Seth went in the way of Cain, for they fixed their minds upon the worldly prosperity and enjoyment of the neglected and neglected the commandments of Yahweh. Men did not like to retain Yahweh in their knowledge, for they became vain in their imagination, and their foolish heart was darkened. Therefore, Yahweh gave them over unto a mind void of the judgment. sin spread abroad in the earth like a deadly leprosy. For nearly 1,000 years Adam lived among men as a witness for the results of sin. Faithfully he sought for the stemming of the tide of the evil, for he had been commanded for the instruction of his posterity in the way of the Yahweh, and he carefully treasured what the Yahweh had revealed unto him and repeated it unto the succeeding generation, unto his children and children's children. Unto the ninth generation he described man's holy and happy estate in the paradise and repeated the history of his fall, telling them of the sufferings by which Yahweh had taught him of the necessity of the strict adherence unto his law, and explaining unto them the merciful provision for their salvation. Yet there were but few who gave heed unto his words. Often he was met with the bitter reproaches for the sin that had brought such woe upon his posterity. For the Adam's life was one of the sorrow, humility, and contrition. When he left Eden, the thought that he must die thrilled him with the horror. He was first made acquainted with the reality of the death in the human family when Cain, his firstborn son, became the murderer of his brother, filled with the keenest remorse for his own sin and doubly bereaved in the death of Abel and the rejection of Cain. Adam was bowed down with the anguish, for he witnessed the wide-spreading corruption that was finally to cause the destruction of the world by a flood. And though the sentence of the death pronounced upon him by his Maker had at first appeared terrible, yet after beholding for nearly 1,000 years the result of sin, he felt that it was merciful and Yahweh for the bringing unto an end a life of the suffering and sorrow. Notwithstanding the wickedness of the antediluvian world, that age was not, as has often been supposed, an era of ignorance and barbarism, for the people were granted the opportunity of the reaching a high standard of the moral and intellectual attainment, for they possessed great physical and mental strength, and their advantage for the acquiring both religious and scientific knowledge were unrivaled. It is a mistake to suppose that because they lived to a great age that their minds matured late, for their mental powers were early developed, and those who cherished the fear of the Yahweh and lived in harmony with His will continued to increase in the knowledge and wisdom throughout their life. Could illustrious scholars of our time be placed in the contrast with men of the same age who lived before the flood, they would appear as greatly inferior in the mental as in the physical strength. As the years of man have decreased and his physical strength has diminished, so his mental capacities have lessened. There are men who now apply themselves for the studying of the And during that period are from 20 to 50 years, and their world is filled with the admiration of their attainment. But how limited are these acquirements in the comparison with those of men whose mental and physical powers are developing for the century? It is true that the people of the modern times have the benefit of the attainments of their predecessors, for the men of the mastery mind who planned and studied with the and wrote have left their work for those who follow. But even in this respect, and so far as merely human knowledge is concerned, how much greater the advantages of the men of that oftentimes they had among them for hundreds of years, him who was forming Yahweh's image, whom the Creator himself pronounced good, for the man whom Yahweh had instructed in all the wisdom pertaining unto the master material world, Adam had learned from the Creator the history of the creation. He himself witnessed the events of 9 centuries, and he imparted his knowledge unto his descendants. For the Antediluvians were without books. They had no written records, but with their great physical and mental vigor, they had strong memories, able for the grasping and for the retaining that which was communicated unto them, and in turn to transmit it unimpaired unto their posterity. And for the hundreds of years, there were 7 generations living upon the earth contemporaneously, having the opportunity of consulting together and profiting each by the knowledge and experience of all, for the advantage enjoyed by men of that age for the gain of a knowledge of the Yahweh through the work, his work, have never been equal since. And so far from being an era of the religious darkness that was an age of the great light, all the world had opportunity to receive instruction from the Adam, and those who had feared the Yahweh had also the Asura and angels for their teachers, and they had a solid witness for the truth in the garden of the Yahweh, which for so many centuries remained among men as the cherubim guarded gates of the paradise. The glory of Yahweh was revealed, and hither came the first worshiper. Here their altars were reared and their offerings presented. It was here that Cain and Abel had brought their sacrifices, and Yahweh had condescended to communicate with them. For the skepticism could not deny the existence of the Eden while it stood just in the sight, its entrance barred by the watching angels, the order of the creation, the object of the garden, the history of his 2 trees, so closely connected with the man's destiny, were undisputed facts, and the existence and supreme authority of Yahweh as the obligation of his law were the truths which men were slow to question while Adam was among them. Notwithstanding the prevailing iniquity, there was a line of the holy men who elevated and ennobled by the communion with Yahweh lived as in the companionship of the heaven, for they were men of the massive intellect of a wonderful attainment, for they had the great and holy mission for the developing of the character of the righteousness for the teaching of a lesson of the righteousness not only unto the men of their time, verily for the future generations. Only a few of the most prominent are mentioned in the scriptures, but all through the ages, Yahweh has had the faithful witnesses, true-hearted worshipers. Of Enoch it is written that he lived 65 years and begets a son, and that he walked with Yahweh 300 years. During these earlier years, Enoch had loved and feared the Yahweh and had kept his commandments. He was one of the holy line of the preservers of the true faith, as the progenitors of the promised seed. From the lips of the Adam, he had learned the dark story of the fall and the cheering one of Yahweh's grace as seen in the promise, and he relied upon the Redeemer to come. But after the birth of his first son, Enoch reached a higher experience. He was drawn into a closer relationship with Yahweh, for he realized more fully of his own obligations and responsibility as a son of Yahweh, and as he saw the child's love for his future, or his father, its simple trust in his protection, as he felt the deep yearning and tenderness of his own heart for that firstborn son, he learned a precious lesson of the wonderful love of men, of Yahweh, unto men, and the gift of his son, and the confidence which the children of Yahweh may repose in their heavenly Father. For the infinite and unfathomable love of Yahweh through Yeshua became the subject of his meditation day and night, and with all the fervor of his soul he sought to reveal that love unto the people among whom he dwelt. For the inner walk of Yahweh, for the Enoch's walk with the Yahweh was not in a trance or a vision, but in all the duties of his daily life. For he did not become a hermit, shutting himself entirely from the world, for he had a work to do for the Yahweh in the world, in the family, and in his intercourse with the men. As a husband and father, a friend, a citizen, he was a steadfast, unwavering servant of Yahweh. His heart was in harmony with Yahweh's will, for can two walk together except they be agreed? And this holy walk was continued for 300 years. There are few Christians who would not be far more honest and devoted if they knew that they had but a short time to live, or that the coming of the Yeshua was about to take place. But the Enoch's faith waxed stronger. His love became more ardent with the lapse of the century. Enoch was a man of the strong and highly cultivated mind, and extensive knowledge. He was honored with a special revelation from Yahweh, yet being in a constant communion with the heaven, with a sense of the divine greatness and perfection ever before him, he was one of the humblest of men. For the closer the connection with Yahweh, the deeper was the sense of his own weakness and imperfection. Distressed by the increasing wickedness of the unrighteous, and fearing that their infidelity might lessen his reverence for the Yahweh, Enoch avoided constant association with them and spent much time in solitude. given himself unto the meditation and prayer. Thus he waited before the others, seeking a clearer knowledge of his will, that he might perform it. Unto him prayer was the breath of the soul. He lived in the very atmosphere of heaven. Through holy angels, Yahweh revealed unto Enoch his purpose for the destroying of the world by a flood, and he also opened more fully unto him the plan of the redemption by the spirit of the prophecy. He carried him down through the generations that should live after the flood, and showed him the great events connected with the second coming of Yahshua and the end of the world. Enoch had been troubled in the regard for the dead. It had seemed to him that the righteous and the wicked would go to the dust together, and that this would be their end. He could not see the life of the just beyond the grave. In the prophetic vision, he was instructed concerning the death of Yahshua, and was shown his coming and the glory, attended all the holy angels to ransom his people from the grave. He also saw the corrupt state of the world, when the Yahshua should appear the second time, that there would be a boastful, presumptuous, self-willed generation, denying the only Yahweh and the Yahshua, the trampling upon the law and despising the atonement. He saw the righteous crowned with the glory and honor, and the wicked banished from the presence of Yahweh and destroyed by the fire. Enoch became a preacher of the righteousness, making known unto the people what the Yahweh had revealed unto him. Those who feared the Yahweh sought out this holy man for the sharing of his instruction and his prayers, for he labored publicly also, bearing Yahweh's message unto all who would hear the words of the warning. For his labors were not restricted for to the Shias or the Sethites and the land where the chain had sought to flee from the divine presence. The prophet of Yahweh made known of the wonderful scenes that had passed before his vision. Behold, he declared, the Yahweh cometh with 10,000 of his saints for the executing judgment upon all, and for the convincing all that are unrighteous among them of all their unrighteous deeds. For he was a fearless reprover of sin. While he preached the love of Yahweh and Yahshua unto the people of his time, and pleaded with them to forsake their evil ways, he rebuked the prevailing iniquity and warned the men of his generation that judgment would surely be visited upon the transgression. It was the spirit of the Yahshua that spoke through Enoch. That spirit is manifested not alone in the utterances of love, compassion, and entreaty. It is not the smooth things only that are spoken by the holy man. Yahweh puts into the heart and lips of his messengers the truth to utter that are known, that are keen and cutting as a two-edged sword. For the power of Yahweh that wrought with his servants was felt by those who heard. Some gave heed unto the warning and renounced their sins, but the multitudes mocked at the solemn message and went on more boldly in their evil ways. For the servants of Yahweh are to hear a similar message unto the world in the last days, and it will be also be received with the unbelief and mockery. The antediluvians world rejected the warning words of him who walked with the Yahweh. So will the last generation make light of the warnings of the Yahweh's messenger in the midst of a light of active labor and it steadfastly maintain his communion with the Yahweh. The greater and more pressing his labors, the more constant and earnest were his prayers, for he continued to exclude himself at the certain periods from all society. After the remaining for a time among the people laboring for the benefiting them by the instruction and example, he would withdraw to spend a season in the solitude, hungering and thirsting for that divine knowledge which the Yahweh alone can impart. Communing thus with the Yahweh, Enoch came more and more to reflect the divine image, for his face was radiant with the holy light, even the light that shineth in the face of Yahshua, as he came forth from these divine communings. Even the unrighteous beheld with awe the impress of the heaven upon his countenance. This brings in verse 10. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. The solid rock. My hope is built on nothing less than precious blood and righteousness. I do not trust the sweetest thing, but wholly lean on Yahshua's name. On Yahshua the solid rock I stand, all of the ground is sinking sand. All of the ground is sinking sand. And darkness fails his lovely face, I rest on his unchanging grace. In every high and stormy gale, my anchor holds swift in the chain. Only Yahshua the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. All other ground is sinking sand. Raise out his cavern at his place, support me in the whelming flood. And all around my soldiers lay, even is all my hope and stay. And Yahshua the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. All other ground is sinking sand. And he shall come with trumpet sound, oh, may I then in him be found. Dressed in his righteousness alone, fruitless to stand before the throne. On Yahshua the solid